Hi everyone, welcome back to the second part of the Chapter 4 episode of Stop Walking on Eggshells. It's Sarah and Talon, and we took last week off, y'all.
Yeah, we did.
We just needed a little bit of R&R.
Yeah, I was literally...
exhausted.
Yeah, I was out of my mind exhausted with work and everything, so...
We took the week off. Lori's in the process of moving, so we're sending her the very best moving vibes. Lori and I share a Canva account for creating, like, images for social, and this bitch has a moving calendar checklist that she made in our Canva account. First of all, if I were moving, which I've done many times, and I write a checklist if I need, which sometimes yes, sometimes no, you better believe it's on the back of my Verizon bill.
A receipt.
Coffee stained. I lost it before I start packing.
I don't think I've ever written a moving checklist. I don't know what I would even put on a moving checklist.
She has it curated in Canva on an actual calendar page.
I love her.
I love her. I love her. Wow. So, we are going to read the second half of Chapter 4, Living in a Pressure Cooker, and we are starting off at the non-BPD responses to borderline behavior. Before we do that, a couple of housekeeping things. One, we have a voicemail to listen to from last week, which I'm really excited about. But two, this book has made me really, like, think a lot about the lack of strengths-based supports and, like, exploring our strengths as people with borderline. So my ass wrote a 30-day journal prompt book with 30 days of mood tracking and 30 days of pages and decided to just publish it. So I'm excited about that. I think it'll be fun. And it's going to become available, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later this week. But I like creating, so really it's more for me. But also when I was looking at it, because I got the proofs back today, I was thinking, wow, like, this is the kind of way I needed to explore my mental health that I am not seeing anyone explore, right? Like, this book has not been strengths-based. We've talked a lot about that. So I'm excited to see if anyone would benefit from kind of, like, looking at their own BPD experience from a strengths-based perspective. And the journal talks a lot about what does it mean to be strengths-based and how do we apply this to ourselves and how do we build person-centered care teams around us. So stay tuned for that. But let's listen to our first voicemail.
Hi, guys. I just listened to the latest book club episode, and I think the self-awareness, both of you, is amazing. And I love how you love each other so cleanly and so collaboratively. It's kind of beautiful. And it gives me hope. Thank you. And the comments on the book were spot on as well.
I love her accent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, it made me choke up a little bit because I'm a big softy, but...
Also, that's the power of being seen, yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't ever think about... I don't ever think about loving you. I just do it, right? Like, and so, like, I don't ever think that people can see or hear or know how much I love you. And then I hear stuff like that and I'm like, oh, wow. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know what I'm trying to say with that. It's odd to me, I guess, to be seen in that way.
Mm-hmm.
To be seen loving somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, it was a nice moment for me to reflect on that I have created something so collaborative in a partnership with someone, because I did not have the skills to do that for most of my life. And it was a win moment for me of like, yeah, no, I built this with this person. We built this together. And the only way that I was able to build this collaborative, supportive partnership was like through being honest, you know. And Lori and I have talked about for so long how I struggle to be honest about my experience. And like I showed you like pictures of my like childhood soccer photos yesterday. And I was like, I've never showed anyone these before. And you were like, why? And I said, I look back at that little girl and all I see is how fat she was. And like that, I've never been able to like show anyone that, you know. And like, I could show you that.
Yeah.
Like, we built that. So thank you so much. That was such a sweet voicemail, and glad to know that listening to us reflect on this book is helping people, because what an interesting little piece of literature.
Yeah, for real.
All right. So getting back into the non-BPD responses to borderline behavior. Borderline behavior causes many reactions in people without BPD. Some of the more common responses are addressed here.
Oh, I wanted to say something about the voicemail that I just remembered.
Please do.
Them saying that, like, we give them hope.
Thank you for saying them, because I utilized she just assuming, and that was helpful for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just were like, you know, you guys give me hope. And that for me, like you said, what, a couple of days ago or the other day or something like that, like that I hold so much hope or something. I'm like one of the most hope filled people you've ever met. I don't know that I've ever come across a community. You guys, people with BPD, you guys in your community, what I've seen, what I've read, what I've absorbed, you guys speak about hope very often. And I can only wonder, and I can only like glean that that's probably because many, many, many of you are hopeless and you're given a diagnosis that doesn't have a hopeful recovery process.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, like that just kind of, I just kind of put those pieces together when they said that. I was like, oh damn, like it's not just you talking about hope. It's like as a community, you guys are probably told often that you're not good partners and that you can't do this or you can't do another thing, you know? And I've never been told that I couldn't be a good partner. I've been told that I'm not a good partner, but I've never been told like, oh, that'll never happen for you.
Right.
I've had other things in my life be like, oh, well, that'll never happen for you.
Right. It's not like you're choosing to be a bad partner. It's you will never
just be able to do that. That is something you will never be able to do.
Yeah.
And I understand being told, like, you'll never be able to do something. But I've never been told you'll never be able to be a good partner.
Or a good person.
Or a good person. And I can't imagine.
Or like yourself.
Or like yourself. I can't imagine being handed a diagnosis and then that's the next piece of information. Almost. Like, I can't even begin to understand what that does to an individual.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I don't know that I can either, because my diagnosis journey was so
Different
because I wasn't on social media.
Right. Yeah, you were a little bit more
I was isolated and almost protected from the profound shaming that happens towards people with this disorder.
Right.
And I had a psychiatrist who said, like, this just is what it is. What does this change for you? You know, like, whether or not you wake up tomorrow with or without this diagnosis, you're still going to have these symptoms. And that was like a helpful way for it to present to me. It wasn't like anything in my life changed. I was still just me.
Right.
And I had context for this.
Yeah, you just had vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did have shitty professors at college that talked crap on borderline. Sure. And that was very distressing. But I was protected from, I didn't have the social media stigma that so many of our young people getting diagnosed with borderline have right now. So even I can't really understand it,
right,
to an extent.
Yeah,
I mean, it's such an interesting thing. We talk about this in the queer community so much, right? But like the Gen Z queer experience is very different from the millennial queer experience, and our experience is very different from
Gen X.
Yeah, you know, and I think the same is true for
mental health. Yeah, but yeah, that's what I just wanted to say.
Yeah. Okay, so one of the most common responses is bewilderment. So the example they give is by Phil, a non-borderline person. At first, everything looks and sounds normal. Then unexpectedly, strange twists and reversals of reality occur. Off-kilter shifts in the time-space continuum hurl me onto the floor as my wife suddenly roars at me for something I can't begin to understand. Suddenly, I realize I've crossed into the borderline zone.
Okay. The hyperbole, I just can't even with the melodrama.
The language is profound.
Like, yeah. I
felt like I was in Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century. Zetus Lapidus, we have crossed into the borderline zone. We are in outer space.
We're in a fever dream of non-reality.
And I am a manic pixie dream girl.
Yes, you are. Yeah,
I can't even take that seriously. Okay, on to the next. Loss of self-esteem is another experience that the non-borderline person may have. So, Beverly Engel...
But you're skipping. That's a hilarious pun.
Okay, we're going back just a few sentences.
Because it's funny.
There's a colloquial term for impulsive aggression that is considered borderline.
And I
prefer lioness.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. And I only...
Because it's like a ferocious beast that is spontaneously uncaged when BP's emotions are so strong and overwhelming, they can no longer be contained. The borderline's claws can be turned outward or inward.
I also...
What just happened in this book? We took a profound shift.
It's very dramatic right now. I don't know. Maybe they were scared they were losing us with all the person-centeredness they were doing in the beginning of the chapter.
A borderline person wrote this and they just don't want to tell us.
I mean, maybe, yeah. I do want to clarify that I only think borderline is funny because I love puns.
Oh, that's fucking hysterical. Come on.
Yeah, I don't want people to think that I'm like, haha, that's hilarious because I'm an insensitive dick.
Okay, well, let's explore the animal kingdom, though. Who's at the end? You better believe the lion is still there.
Yeah, that's true. For now. And there's like poachers and stuff.
Okay. No. Loss of self-esteem. Beverly Engel and the Emotionally Abused Woman describes the effect of emotional abuse on self-esteem. Emotional abuse cuts to the very core of a person, creating scars that may be longer lasting than physical ones. With emotional abuse, the insults, insinuations, criticism, and accusations slowly eat away at the victim's self-esteem until she is incapable of judging the situation realistically. She has become so beaten down emotionally that she blames herself for the abuse. Emotional abuse victims can become so convinced that they are worthless that they believe that no one else could want them. They stay in abusive situations because they believe they have nowhere else to go. Their ultimate fear is being alone. Okay, before you say anything...
Okay.
I don't think that they understand that what they were trying to convey was that is the experience of the non-borderline person receiving the borderline quote unquote emotional abuse, but what they actually did was depict a beautiful example of how we develop borderline.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I guess that's true.
They did not intend to do that.
No. And like what they're citing here, I'm assuming is a book.
Yeah.
That I don't really appreciate citing a source that isn't specifically targeted to the subject. I think that is very...
They're not talking about borderline. They're referring to a book from the 90s.
About abuse.
About abuse.
So when it comes to like literary analysis, that would be... something that I would have gotten marked down.
Yeah, that's an inappropriate.
It's an inappropriate citation. Yeah, and basically, like, you can make anything say what you want it to say if you cut out the context, right? Which is what they've done here.
ChatGPT would not approve.
No, ChatGPT would not approve. And I want to say that, like, the emotional abuse does that. Like, absolutely.
Well, and again, like, this is what happens when we speak as if BPD, NPD, all of these cluster B disorders are synonymous with abusers.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, this is, like, very...
I wish they would have said instead is when you're in a partnership with someone with borderline who's not treating their symptoms effectively, you can feel... as if you're the target of their emotional dysregulation. And that over time can result in a loss of self-esteem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like that, it would be an effective way to say that, right? Yeah. That it can be confusing. It can make you feel like you're not doing good enough. That can make you feel like you're not a good partner. That can result in loss of self-esteem. But all of that was just like...
Are you a fan of global travel? Are you wanting to see more of the world yourself? Well, then you're my kind of people. My name is DeAndre Koch, and I'm the host of the travel podcast, Revolutionizing Your Journey, where we share stories of everyday people making the most of global travel and also teach you how to do the same yourself. You'll hear stories from people just like you who learned how to travel for nearly free, like Jo, who realized she could take her daughter to Disneyland in Tokyo for cheaper than in the US, or Rob, who flew his entire family of seven to Europe round trip in business class, all for less than the price of economy. Check out the link in the description for the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast to learn how to elevate your own travels.
All of that was talking about a specific set of behavior, abusive behavior. The motivations of abuse are different than the motivations of somebody who is dysregulated, right? Like, it's...
Well, and that's what I'm saying. That's what they did such a beautiful job of actually depicting as the borderline experience, is that most of us experienced insults, insinuations, criticisms, and accusations in childhood that developed our profound lack of self-esteem that, mixed with environmental factors, genetics, and all of these things... results in borderline personality disorder. We have felt so beaten down emotionally that we blame ourselves for the abuse. When you believe you are worthy of terrible things happening to you and terrible things being said to you, you develop defense mechanisms to prevent terrible things from happening to you again. Why do you think we say, "I fucking hate you, get away from me," instead of welcoming love in? Mm-hmm. Because if I welcome love in, you could hurt me more.
You might lose it, yeah.
I have thought many times about sending this podcast to the author, but I'm too afraid of getting sued. But that would be a good example of where, you know.
With, not for.
Right.
Should have been in practice.
All right. The next thing the non-borderline person can feel is trapped and helpless. And I know that people have felt trapped by me. I did lock one of my partners in a bathroom and sit on the inside of the door, preventing them from being able to get out when I was 19. So, the borderline's behaviors cause a great deal of anguish, but leaving seems impossible or improbable. Non-borderline people may believe they are trapped in the relationship because they either feel overly responsible for the safety or they feel overly guilty for perhaps causing the borderline person to feel and behave the way they do. The borderline person's threat of suicide or threat to harm others can paralyze the non-borderline person and make him or her feel as if leaving the relationship is too risky. This is going to be such a triggering section because I know most of us have heard from partners, I can't leave you because if you do, you'll kill yourself. I attempted suicide and told my ex-wife it was her fault. I did that on my 28th birthday. Like, I just want that to set in that there is a reason that this is spoken about. Some people with borderline do say unethical, inappropriate things when they are in profound pain. The result of that on people, I can only imagine how painful that is. And if I was to be characterized by that one experience for the rest of my life, does that set me up for success?
No.
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 Sometimes stigma is based in truth and it's still damaging.
Yeah.
But that one incident overpowers all of the good.
I mean,
and I'm not saying every person with borderline will attempt suicide and tell people it's their fault, no. Right? That's something that I did.
Right.
Also, let it be said that I was very intoxicated.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, you had other factors, obviously, coming into play. I do think that, like, should we be characterized by one awful moment in our life that we did, that we are responsible for, an action, a behavior, a horrible sentence, should that define and wipe away all the good we've done? No.
Right. And also, let it be said, that's not even the worst thing I've done.
Fair. I also think, though, I think that, like, you know, for some people, like, on the receiving end of that behavior, that is it, right? That is the last straw. That is the final, you know, that's the coup de grace, and that's like what severs a relationship, and that's like this, that, or the other thing. So, like, should that define you and your character? No. Could it possibly end up ending a relationship or being the last thing for somebody to walk away?
Or, like, yes. They said, feeling trapped.
Or they never walk away.
But this is always what I come back to, right? And I just want to say, y'all, I'm safe. We're good. If I hadn't had been safe. God forbid if I had been successful in that attempt. That would have been about me. That would have not been about my ex-wife.
Yeah.
My pain that I was experiencing as a result of our marriage ending was my responsibility. And I would have never wanted, I still would never want her to live with thinking that that attempt was her fault, because that attempt was not her fault. That was my responsibility.
Yeah.
And so how people respond to behavior like that, that appears extreme, is their responsibility. If you feel trapped by your partner, but you're not physically trapped, mm-hmm. That is yours,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
To process and cope through and decide, am I going to live with this feeling of being trapped, or am I going to address this feeling of being trapped? Right. And again, comes back to personal accountability always, yeah. Always, always, always.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that really well.
This is a heavy, whew.
Yeah, I mean, but like it's important, right? Like,
do you want to know what's going through my head?
Yeah, I would love to know what's going through your head.
I hope nobody ever finds this fucking podcast. If they do, they're going to take my credential to practice therapy away from me. My life will fall apart. I'll never have anything to live for. People will think I'm a fraud and a fake. Nobody will ever love me. I will never be successful in a long-term partnership. My parents would be mortified. We hardly have any sponsorship money coming from this podcast to pay for it, but the little sponsorship money we have, maybe they'll cut. And again, that's not even the worst thing I've done in my life. But like the willingness to just say that I did that results in 30 immediate scenarios of how I am ultimately going to be a failure. Because like nobody would be able to just hear that and recognize that that was a thing that I did in profound pain. It would just be stigmatized. That's how it feels.
Yeah, those are just thoughts, though. You know, just because you think them doesn't mean they're true.
Yeah. People may feel withdrawal. They may feel guilt and shame.
You want to skip over withdrawal?
Yeah, I mean, actually, no.
Yeah.
The non-border. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a little overwhelmed here.
Do you want to take a break?
No. I'm good. I'm just preparing for this section.
That's why I asked you.
Okay.
I feel like you might have some words about withdrawal.
Okay. The non-borderline person may leave the situation either emotionally or physically. This could include working long hours. Remaining silent for fear of saying something wrong or terminating the relationship. This may result in the person with BPD feeling abandoned and acting out more intensely. The non-borderline person may leave children alone with the borderline person for longer periods of time. If the borderline person acts abusively towards the children, the non-borderline person isn't there to protect them.
I'll pause for a sec.
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You want me to start?
Yeah.
So, we had, I don't know, like a little thing like a week or two ago, I think, where I'll just say what I think you were thinking. We already talked about it. We already like squashed it out. We were good to go. It wasn't a big thing, but I think that you thought I was withdrawing from you. And you were looking for some verbal validation about how you were feeling about a situation that had happened. And I had told you, like, I just wasn't able to talk to you about that particular... It was external to our relationship, but I wasn't able to, like, participate in the conversation at that point because I was so tired and overwhelmed and overstimulated from work. I was just, like, exhausted and mentally not okay. And you took my like inability to give you anything as I think you thought you were being too much and that I wasn't like in it with you. And I didn't realize, like, I completely missed that you were just looking for validation of your emotions and how you were feeling. And I thought you wanted to like talk out the situation. And that caused a little bit of like, I don't know, a little bit of, I don't really know the word for it, just kind of like a misunderstanding between us for a day or two until we like basically until I was like able to be back in my body all the way and was like, oh my God, like I totally missed the fact that you were just wanting love and validation from me and I wasn't able to give that to you. And I remember you saying, like, you telling me you're not able to talk about this right now is like extremely triggering to me. And I remember, like, in the moment, not understanding what I said, like how that was triggering to you. But then, like, a day or two later when I was like, hey, I'm really sorry for not being more available this week or whatever, and like I, you know, I wrote you that nice text or whatever, and you were like, that's what I needed the other night. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry that I couldn't give that to you. Now reading this little withdrawal blurb, that makes sense. That made, like, you thought I was withdrawing from you, like your ex-wife withdrew from you because you were too much.
Yeah.
Why? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I tend to be a little bit more withdrawn or quiet when I'm working through stuff or when I'm like exhausted, or what did Mavi say the other day, that I'm reclusive and withdrawn, so it's hard for people to get anything from me, you know? I'm not like that with you often. So I think, like, perhaps you seeing that brought up some stuff, big stuff.
Yeah, I think, like, for me too, like, you know, my ex-wife told me, I'm a cop before I'm your wife. And I don't know if that's still how she operates with her new wife. I hope it's not. But I wonder if I didn't have borderline, if she would have been different, if she would have been my wife before she was a cop. But her being a cop before she was my wife was a really good built-in protective factor for her to leave my chaos, because she was a cop first. And, you know, it's not circumstantial that by the end of our relationship, she was working 16-hour shifts, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. I was very symptomatic the last 6 months of our relationship. And she was never there. And she would be like, you know, if you need me, call me on my work cell. But then eventually it was like, you can't be calling me on my work cell. And we were planning to have a family and have babies. And then eventually it was like, I don't think that with your borderline, we can do that right now. And then the marriage was over. I think, like, the last statement for me of this section is the most damaging in the book so far.
Yeah.
The non-borderline person may leave children alone with the borderline person for longer periods of time. If the borderline person acts abusively towards the children, the non-borderline person isn't there to protect them. There's, like, nothing more that I want in this world than to be a mom. And I thought that I was going to have that, and then it was gone. And then, you know, it wasn't gone because my body couldn't do it. It was gone because my brain couldn't, and I can't change my brain. And to be told that, like, you're going to hurt this like precious, innocent, beautiful creature that just needs to be loved, you know, that why would I ever try? I love you.
I love you too. I'm not a pizza boy before I'm your husband.
You're not a pizza boy before you're my husband. It goes on to talk about the guilt and shame that people feel and that people often adopt unhealthy habits and they may isolate themselves. Let's talk about isolation. The unpredictability and moodiness of people with borderline can make friendships difficult. Okay, that's because making excuses or covering up the borderline's behavior can be so emotionally exhausting that some people find it's not worth to sustain the effort, or it's not worth the effort to sustain friendships. Many non-borderline people say that friends often suggest solutions that are simplistic or unacceptable, which leaves the non-borderline person feeling misunderstood. Some say they lose friendships because their friends don't believe them or grow tired of hearing about their struggles. Frequently, non-borderline people become isolated because the borderline person in their lives insists that they cut off ties with others.
Okay. Okay. I was, like, going along with that. Now I'm, like, irritated. So let's... Making excuses or covering up the borderline's behavior can be emotionally exhausting. Nobody asked you to do that. Nobody expects you to do that. That's ridiculous. If you're making excuses and covering up somebody's behavior, borderline or not, that is you. You are doing that. You need to look in and say, why am I doing this? Why am I covering this up? Why am I protecting this person? Right. Borderline or not. That's you. That's you not having healthy boundaries within a friendship. Like, that's just what that is.
And, like, maybe you don't feel safe in your friendships.
Exactly.
What kind of safety is being fostered in those friendships that exactly. You feel like you can't be honest?
100%. Many non-BPs say that friends often suggest solutions that are simplistic or unacceptable, which leaves the non-BPs feeling misunderstood. If you are feeling misunderstood by somebody, you need to say, like, I don't feel like you're hearing me. Again, you need to be taking proactive steps in your friendships to cultivate and foster honest friendships. Is it easy? No. Is it successful all the time? No. Do friends often misunderstand you? Yes. I have two best friends that I have known, Jesus, for 20 years this year. We have had our ups and downs, and many times I have had to say, I don't feel like you're understanding me.
Right.
I don't feel like I'm being clear. I don't get upset with them when they are not understanding what I'm going through. I'm like, I don't feel like you're hearing me. And that, you know, and that has cultivated this, like, if they can sense sometimes that maybe they're not understanding me and they're like, I don't know if I'm getting this. I don't know if I'm getting that right. We discuss a lot of stuff over text in the group chat, right? So, like, sometimes things don't convey over text. Sometimes it does take a FaceTime call.
Yeah.
So, like, that's another thing, right? Some say they lose friendships because their friends don't believe them or grow tired of hearing about their struggles. I feel like that's pretty normal.
Well, we have to say to our friends, you're being ableist.
Yeah.
Like, you're being ableist by trying to suggest solutions that are for a person who doesn't have borderline.
Right.
You're being ableist by thinking,
my ADHD will be cured by yet another planner.
Right.
Well, you know.
You're being ableist by thinking that these symptoms or struggles in this relationship might go away.
Yeah.
Will they change? Yes. Will they lessen? Yes. Will they go away?
No.
I am never going to not potentially have to leave a social event in the middle of it that we committed to. For the rest of our lives.
Good, because I wanted to be home at sweatpants anyway, so let's go.
Like, there's just... I am as medicated as I could be.
And?
There's no fucking way. And, like, maybe that's black and white, and maybe I don't know what the future is like, but y'all, I've lived in this little brain for 30 years. I don't think the next 30 are gonna bring me a fucking jolly time at social events.
Yeah. I mean, you do have social anxiety, though, so...
We have to be willing to say to people that they're being ableist. And if you're not willing to say that, that's on you.
Well, I completely agree. And then it says, frequently non-BPs become isolated because the BPs in their lives insist that they cut off ties with others. Too often the non-BPs comply. Once a non-BP becomes more isolated, several things can happen. And then whatever. But, like, I have a problem with that sentence.
Yeah. I mean, I have done this. Like, I have been like, I fucking hate your friend, blah, 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 yada, yada. I won't be around them.
Yeah, that, though, is not, you can't see them anymore.
Well, yeah, but who knows what I said when I was 19, right? I mean, sure. But also, I can tell you, every single friend of a partner I've had that I hated, they said and did really inappropriate things.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to be around you when you're slut-shaming.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be around you when you're using inappropriate language. Like, inappropriate meaning, like, stigmatizing and demonizing language.
Yeah, not the F word.
Right. I love the F word.
Yeah. But, like, and again, though, like, you know, saying, like, I'm not going to be around your friend is different than, like, you can't be around your friend. So, like, how those two things are phrased, like... I understand.
But okay, but devil's advocate, though.
Okay.
Some people want to be in their relationships, and so... I mean, yes, at the end of the day, it does all come back down to personal accountability and responsibility, but does the other person have the skills and tools to do that, the right resources and support, the positive examples to do that?
Right.
Like, I mean, I know that, like, the people I've been in relationships have deeply wanted to be in relationships with me, mm-hmm, and compromised a lot of things along the way, mm-hmm, to stay in those relationships.
Sure.
So I could see how it would feel
like you
that they are isolated and, like, you have to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody needs to be in therapy.
Yeah, basically. Okay.
It goes on to talk about hypervigilance and physical illnesses. So people with a borderline partner might have more stress and, as a result, more physical illnesses. I think that's fair. I don't have any. Like, that's biology. We know that if you have more stress in your life, you're going to be sicker. Your immune system is going to be compromised. How often... you know, are our non-borderline folks having healthy self-care routines? That's where it's like, well, what are you doing to take care of yourself? Are you exercising? Are you eating well? Are you going to therapy? Are you, like, understanding your genetic predispositions and caring for them? Like, you know, do all those things.
Yeah.
So speaking of self-care, I just want to remind y'all about Magic Mind. A few weeks ago, we talked about how it can be helpful in giving us energy and increasing our productivity. But let's talk about feeling present. I think we often struggle to connect to our bodies. I know I do. And you guys know how I feel about mindfulness. Mindfulness is the core of remaining healthy, effective, intentional individuals. Magic Mind can be another self-care tool to help us remain mindful. It contains ashwagandha, which is an adaptogen that reduces stress and anxiety, therefore making it easier to name what's happening in our bodies because we're not so flooded with the stress hormones, making it difficult to practice mindfulness. I'd recommend taking a quick, cute magic mind shot, and then maybe within the hour doing a deep breathing or progressive muscle relaxation activity in the middle of your day just to kind of reset. I need a reset. I find it super helpful and calming on a high stress day to just intentionally start over. If you are looking for that, don't forget to go to magicmind.com/boldbeautiful to get 50% off your subscription, or use the code boldbeautiful at magicmind.com to promote your mindfulness practice. All right. Adoption of BPD-like thoughts and feelings. Non-borderline people often begin to see things in black and white and all or nothing solutions to problems. Moodiness is also extremely common in non-borderline people. They're often in a good mood when the borderline person is up and a bad mood when the borderline person is down. The shit's fucking addictive.
Yeah, I mean, our brain does, like, develop, like the up and down pattern, like our brain does develop the desire, need, and want for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the fucking
science. Well, when you're up, it's the dopamine that comes from that is so good.
Yeah, and then when you're down, you know.
Non-borderline people may also develop codependence. The non-borderline person often performs heroic acts of kindness, no matter what the price to themselves is. In an effort to help the person they love, they may swallow their anger, ignore their own needs, accept behavior that most people would find intolerable, and forgive the same transgressions again and again. This is a common trap for non-borderline people, especially if the borderline person had an unhappy childhood and the non-borderline person is trying to make up for it. You can't fix.
No, I'm not trying ever to fix you. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm never gonna.
A really good, healthy way to do this, if you're trying to make up for someone's shitty childhood, is like empowering them to do inner child play.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, like, Talon and I live in a 2-bedroom house with 4 people in 1 bathroom. 2 cats, 2 fish, 1 dog. It's a little wild. We also have a baby 3 days a week, 4 days a week.
Yeah, one of the roommates has a 4-year-old.
I live in Talon's 10 by 10 room.
Yes.
When we have our own house, you better believe it's not going to be as overwhelming to me, but sometimes it's very overwhelming to me. But Talon has a Pokemon collection and a stuffed animal collection that's quite large.
Okay, the stuffed animal collection isn't that big, but there's probably like 20.
This is the cutest story. My mom came to the house. My mom came to the house. And she thought Talon's bedroom, which is effectively our bedroom, but Talon's bedroom, was the 4-year-old's bedroom that we live with.
Yeah.
And I was really proud that I turned to my mom and I said, no, that's Talon's room.
Yeah.
Like, he loves stuffed animals. He wasn't empowered to keep them as a young person.
Yeah.
I think it's beautiful that he loves stuffed animals. Mm-hmm. I am not going to buy you a new Squishmallow every time we go to Target, but once in a while,
yeah,
I love to stomp in mud puddles.
You do.
Like, these are really beautiful ways of, like, empowering inner child play in adulthood. You can't make up for what someone was missing, though.
No, and that's the whole thing, like, this inner child work has been something that's been hard for me to participate in. I hold a lot of shame around my love and like for childish things. Still, it was really hard when your mom was like, oh, is that the 4-year-old's bedroom? And you were like, no, it's Talon's room. I almost was like, no, it's not. Like, my gut reaction was be like, no, that's not my room. my gut reaction, like, was to get up and shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, and it's been just, like, a few years where I've really started to just let people see it.
Mm-hmm.
I would only be like, if I knew you for a long time and I trusted you, would maybe you be allowed to see my room and the way it is, right? Without me, like, stuffing all my stuffed animals under the bed or whatever, you know? So, inner child work is really, really, really difficult and hard, I think, for people sometimes. Me, and I'll just speak for me, it's really hard for me. So being empowered to do that by a partner without you trying to do it for me,
right,
is awesome and feels really good. And it doesn't feel like you're like, I don't know how to describe it, but there's an ebb and flow with it where, like, yeah, you won't, like, buy me a Squishmallow every time we go to Target.
No, absolutely not. Those things are expensive, and do you know how much space they take up in that 10 by 10 room?
Yeah, but you do let me go look.
Absolutely. I point them out.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, like, one of those things where, like, that, like, it, you're not like, no, you can't have that. And then sometimes, like, yes, absolutely, you can. You're like, bro, we don't have a lot of space, but let's go look at them at least. So there's, like, a way to, like, I don't know, facilitate it without... Because I've found that, like, in previous relationships, people accepted my more childlike behavior or whatever, you know, inner child work or whatever. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's so cute. It's so sweet. And then I felt like it was like a light switch and we were at a certain point in the relationship and they realized, oh, this is forever. And then they just weren't into it anymore. And that is like the biggest, that's like soup, that really fucks me up. And so I'm always afraid when somebody is accepting of, you know, like, oh, your stuffed animals are so cute. I'm automatically on guard because I'm like, well, how long is it going to be until they're not cute anymore and they're annoying?
I don't think I ever said they were cute.
No. You never even said anything about them at all.
Yeah.
You were just like, oh, okay.
No, I said that one should be named Lemon. That's like the only thing yeah. I said.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, yeah. And then you were fascinated that some had names and some didn't.
And then I was like, no, I don't like that name. We're going to rename it this.
But, yeah, I don't know. Empowering our partners is so much... more fulfilling than trying to fix or make up for something.
You will never fix. All right, we're going to read the last two pages of this chapter, which is this normal? Question mark.
Okay.
It can be very hard to determine what kind of behavior is normal and what isn't. The following questions may help. The more yes answers you give, the more that we recommend you take a hard look at the behavior of the borderline person and how it may be affecting your life. Okay. Love this game. Do people in healthy, happy relationships tell you that they don't understand why you are still putting up with the borderline person's behavior?
Oh my God. How do you know somebody is in a happy, healthy relationship? Like,
right.
It should be like, I don't even know how you would rephrase that question.
Any way we perceive people's relationships from the outside is...
happy and healthy.
Like, we have no way of knowing.
I feel like it more should be like...
do you try to avoid contact with these people? Do you feel the need to cover up some of the borderline person's behavior? Have you betrayed other people or told lies to protect the borderline person or your relationship with them? Are you becoming isolated? Wow, I think my ex-wife would have said yes to so many of these. Does the thought of spending time with a borderline person give you unpleasant physical sensations? Do you have other possibly stress-related ailments? Has the borderline person ever expressed their anger at you by attempting to cause you legal, social, or financial difficulties? Are you becoming clinically depressed? Then they list the signs. Have you considered suicide? Have you acted in ways that go against your fundamental values and beliefs as a result of your relationship with the borderline person? Are you concerned about the effects of this person's behavior on children? Have you interceded to prevent abuse from occurring? Have you or the borderline person ever put each other in physical danger? Are you making decisions out of fear, obligation, and guilt? Does your relationship with the borderline person seem to be more about power and control than kindness and caring? Again, all of this is speaking to abuse.
Yeah. It's all abuse.
Would you say yes to any of these?
Let me see. No. 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 No.
Unpleasant physical sensations. Daddy.
I don't understand what that means.
Daddy does not have that experience.
I do not. No. Do I have possibly stress-related ailments? No. The only stress-related ailments I have are from work. Coming home to you, honestly, is like getting into a hot bath. It's just like, fuck, thank God.
I'm yeah.
Home, you know. Express their anger at you by attempting... No. 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 Am I being clinically depressed? No. No. Never. No. Absolutely not. Never. Nothing in this world, no matter how much I love you, could ever make me do that.
Act against your values.
No. Yeah. Never. Never. No. 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 Never. No. Never. I don't do that, honestly. No. No, if anything, our relationship feels most about kindness and caring.
Than any relationship you've been in?
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
I know for a fact that, like, that is very important to you, and it is very important to me.
We took a very long dog intermission, followed by another.
Phone call. Yeah, so, like, I would say... I just want to finish my thought on that, because it matters to me. It's important to me. But, like, our relationship... we really, at least I know I really, and no, I know you really, we both really prioritize kindness and caring for the other person.
Yeah.
Like, you and I both are very passionate about fostering like a safe space. And that also includes like a safe space to express anger, a safe space to express frustration with each other, with other people, with things, with life. Like, a safe space is not just like, oh, baby, I love you so much, like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's the ability to, like, be ugly in front of your significant other. Not towards.
Right.
But ugly in front of.
Right.
Without the fear, ideally, of, like, being rejected or you know, having them be like, oh, are you mad at me or whatever. Like, it's a safe space has to include... ugly emotions as well as the beautiful, fun, sweet, nice ones, I think.
Yeah.
So I answered no to all of those in my relationship with you.
Yeah. And I mean, again, having a cluster B personality disorder is not synonymous with being an abuser.
No.
And I really wish the book would have written...
that somewhere?
Oh, I think they did write that somewhere, but I wish that they would have reinforced that a bit more.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Chapter 5, huh?
Final word on chapter 4, part 2. What's your... I can tell you mine right away. It's disappointment.
Oh. That's, I think, the first, like, super negative word you've had.
Yeah, I was really disappointed in the demonization of borderline symptoms in the second half of this behavior, this chapter, in the way we think about how the borderline behavior impacts the non-borderline person, as they put it. I was really disappointed. I think that this, for me particularly, was a very damaging section.
I think I think that's, I can absolutely see why it would have been. I think I think my word or phrase or whatever is fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
Like, and again, I'm attempting to be objective, something I'm not particularly good at when reading things that I feel strongly about. But like, the book did have me going for a little while where I was like, all right, okay, cool. And then we started this tone again, and then it almost
felt like revenge porn.
Yeah,
I feel like they put my emotional nudes on a fucking
slideshow and sent it to everybody in the office.
I was gonna even go a little bit further, like, you know, like Saks Fifth Avenue billboard.
Yeah, I think that I
used to joke that there's so many nudes of me floating around that I could never be a senator.
That's probably true. You do send nudes.
Yeah.
And probably fairly indiscriminately at one point in your life.
Yeah, I mean, at some point when you're so heavily tattooed, it's like, well, yeah. I mean, why would I cover up my face? Because
they can just see my thigh tattoo and know it's me.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. That's, I mean, that's how I feel about it. It's like, whatever. Yeah, I would say, like, this book, I guess, like, I'm going to just... This book has a goal and a purpose and a... What's that fucking...
It's serving its purpose very well. Yeah, I mean, it is... It is... Well, I guess its goal is to take your life back when someone you care about has borderline personality disorder. I mean, we're 75 pages into this book and you haven't told me a single strategy for how to take my life back. You have simply just given me a ton of data for how to hate people with borderline.
Essentially, yeah.
You have not given me any cope ahead plan.
No
interpersonal effectiveness skills. No distress tolerance skills.
No
emotion regulation skills.
Nothing.
Nothing in this book has given me a strategy I could directly apply to take my life back when someone I care about has borderline personality disorder. But what it sure the fuck has done has given me a ton of language to demonize people with borderline personality disorder.
And validate that this, as a non-borderline person, none of this is my fault.
That, yeah, none of it is my fault.
Like,
and I mean, again, like, there were good chapters.
Yeah,
there were good sections in this book. I don't think that my statement just a second ago is necessarily fully fair, but that's how I feel right now.
Yeah, it's
okay.
It was rough.
Yeah, it was rough. So, we're getting into part two of this book. Lori and Aaron will be reading chapter 5 next week. Go ahead and tell Talon and I what you think about it. Leave us a voicemail at boldbeautifulborderline.com and we can play your beautiful little voices and hear them. And stay tuned for my little surprise strengths-based journal that I'm dropping here in a few days. It's really cute and really fun. And I'm thinking that we all need to be looking at ourselves from a strengths-based perspective, because if we don't, who will?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.